The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. The apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." The Lord replied, "If you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted in the sea,' and it would obey you. Who among you would say to your servant who has just come in from plowing or tending sheep in the field, 'Come here immediately and take your place at table'? Would he not rather say to him, 'Prepare something for me to eat, put on your apron, and wait on me while I eat and drink'? You may eat and drink when I am finished. Is he grateful to that servant because he did what was commanded? So should it be with you. When you have done all you have been commanded, say, 'We are unprofitable servants. We have done what we were obliged to do.'" The Gospel of the Lord. There's an old saying that all analogies limp, and there's some images I want to use today, and they limp in certain ways, but hopefully we can draw some meaning out of them regardless. I'm not saying that I'm God. That's my preference to the limping analogies. But when I was in college, I had the blessing of being able to spend a semester in Rome studying. Went to the Angelicum, which made me feel very important. And this was during the life, although it was towards the end of the life of John Paul II. And so he was, he was in Rome. He wasn't traveling anymore. He was too sick to travel. And I went every Wednesday to the Wednesday audiences that the Pope had in St. Peter's Square. Children, cover your ears. I would skip class Wednesday morning every week and go to see the Pope. I love the Pope. And there was a special place we would go to sit every time. And you could always, every week I watched while the pilgrims and the sort of visitors came, and they wanted to sit as close as they could to the Holy Father. So they'd get there very early, and as soon as security opened, they would run to the front rows and sit there. The problem is, even if you got in the very front row, you would never be more than like 50 yards away from the Holy Father. But us veterans knew that if you go sit in the back row in the corner right there, like the back corner of like this front section, then when the Pope drives in, he does a little tour with his Pope mobile, and he would drive right past you, not once but twice. And so we knew that if we sat in that spot, we would, even though we were very far away from the stage, we would see the Pope twice within 6 feet of us. And I loved the Holy Father, and I was always amazed. I think this has to do not only with him being Pope, but with his sanctity. I was always amazed by the peace and joy that would descend upon the crowd whenever he entered. And even if it was hot and even if people were kind of complaining and getting irritated with each other, it would just be peace when he arrived. And once, I think I was like 21 back then, but a thought occurred to me that has become a line of thought that's developed over the years, and it's still kind of developing in my mind. I saw him one day, and I thought, I would do anything for that man. I mean, I have total trust in him. I would follow him through fire. I'd do anything he told me to do. I just have that much trust and filial devotion in him. And it occurred to me in that moment, this is maybe the closest I've ever come to knowing what it feels like to have a beloved king. And the thought that's developed over my years since then is, this is something that we as Americans, and specifically as, red-blooded, dyed-in-the-wool Americans, we're sort of deprived a little bit of that experience, right? Because Americans hate kings, and actually the submission to authority is really a very un-American reality. In fact, let's look at the way Americans tend to view authority, right? We look and we say, even our highest rulers in the land, in a sense, they work for us, right? It's this whole modernist notion that the authority to govern derives from the consent of the governed. And if we're unhappy with something that our leaders do, we expect that they're going to answer to us, that they're going to make some sort of change, that there's going to be an accounting, right? We see that not only in politics, and by the way, this is I'm not doing a political commentary right now. I'm not offering commentary on whether liberal democracy is the best government. I'm simply acknowledging that there is this mentality in us, right? That the power, with all authority, the power really rests with the people, right? And the will of the people, in a sense, creates an obligation on the part of the person in authority. And we kind of see that trickle down in, for instance, the very American notion that the customer is always right, right? And if the customer complains enough, he's going to get what he wants. Well, if any of you have ever had customers, you know that the customer is usually not right, you know. A place that I've encountered this in as a president of a high school, and you know, I've dealt with my fair share of complaints, which is not surprising. What has been surprising to me, and what continually stuns me, is when people bring their complaints. You know, they have some concern or something they don't like. There is the sort of implicit belief that because I'm making a demand, you are going to comply with my demand. And when I don't, there's almost a sense of shock and betrayal or outrage, right? If I don't change the program that they don't agree with, or if I don't fire the teacher or the coach that they don't like, or if I don't kick the kid out of school that they feel like should be kicked out of school, there's this sense of outrage, right? Like, I came in here, I'm a parent, I pay tuition, I demand this, and you didn't give me what I wanted. And for many, the next step then is to write letters to the bishop demanding that I be removed from... it's true. Those things happen. I always wonder what people are thinking when they write that letter. You know, what happened to Father Boulding? Well, he wouldn't let the cheerleaders go to Disneyland, so now he's a hospital chaplain in Bullhead City. Now... what I want to draw from this image, and this is, you know, again, I said all analogies limp. I realize to a certain extent, you know, I am a servant, and I do serve the families that go to my school. I'm just trying to illustrate a point about the American mentality, because it becomes problematic if we can't shed that mentality in our approach to God. Because, brothers and sisters, God is not an elected official. He doesn't answer to us. Our will, our desire, does not place an obligation on God. And if we don't like something he does, he doesn't have to reconcile himself to us. In fact, we have to reconcile ourselves to him. I once heard a religious woman, I don't know if it was one of our sisters or another nun, say, the problem with being married to Jesus is that when there are relationship issues, you know it's your fault. What's needed of us in our approach to the Lord is not a sense of entitlement, right? That's maybe the shorthand. I could have skipped all of that imagery and just said Americans are entitled. What we need is not entitlement, right? What we need is not this inborn sense in us of what we are owed, right? And I think a lot of us begin our concept of the faith by thinking, I have a natural born right to go to heaven, and unless I do something really, really, really awful, the Lord needs to fulfill that obligation that he owes me to save my soul, right? We have that approach, and that's really problematic, right? And Jesus is speaking against that in the imagery he uses today of the unprofitable servant, right? And he says, if you have a servant, which is another thing that's kind of foreign to the American mentality, but if you have somebody whose job it is to serve you, and they've been working out in the field all day, when they come in, do you say, oh, please sit down, let me feed you? Right? No, you say, put on your apron, serve me supper, and then you can eat. And the Lord says, it's just like that with you. When you've done everything that you've been asked to do, if we let the Lord make us saints, which is his plan for all of us, he wants us all to become saints. If we lay down our lives and live heroically holy and self-sacrificial lives, all we can really say to the Lord is, I am an unprofitable servant. Not a bad servant, but an unprofitable one, a break-even servant. There's no value added here, right? Even with my attempts to grow in heroic holiness, I've only done what I was obliged to do. Right? There we have not an attitude of entitlement, not an attitude of, you work for me, God, but an attitude of filial piety, of devotion, of love, of obedience, of reliance, of submission. Now we take that into the other part of today's readings, which is about faith and prayer. Right? And there can be a scandal when we hear Jesus say things like, if you had faith the size of a mustard seed, which is very small, you could say to that mountain, get up and be cast into the sea. Or in the example today, you could say the mulberry tree, which apparently I'm told has very deep roots and it's hard to uproot. If you had faith this big, you could say to the mulberry tree, get up and go into the sea, and it would do it. We say, but Father, I have prayed for a lot of things that haven't been answered. And I've prayed with fervor, and I've prayed with faith, and I've prayed with trust, and I begged God, and I still got sick, and my family member still died, and I still lost my job, and I still lost my house. You know, not all of our prayers are answered. And so how do we respond to that? Do we say, well, Jesus apparently said you don't believe enough. If you believed just a little bit harder, you would have got whatever you wanted, right? But we need to hold these two things together. We need to hold these two things together. We need to have confidence that prayer can do miraculous things, that when we really believe and trust in the Lord, that amazing things can be done. But we also need to remember that the reason amazing things can be done is because we have an amazing God. I mean, we have a very, very powerful master, but we also need to remember that we are servants of a very powerful master. He can do a lot in us. He can do anything he wants in us if we let him. But our approach to him always needs to be one of submission, of filial piety, of devotion. And if we approach him that way, with that open-handedness, with that obedience, with that surrender, that trust that says, everything that I have is yours, and I owe you everything. I answer to you in everything. That kind of faith is the kind of faith that can move mountains or uproot mulberry trees and have it planted in the sea. Have them planted in the sea. When we can approach the Lord and say, Lord, I am only your unprofitable servant, but I know that you can do these good things in my life, then the Lord will and can and wants to do amazing things in and through and for us.